Welcome to the No Sports Report, a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. My name is Jensen Karp, and I'm a sports fan, which nowadays means I'm basically a contract lawyer. Because if you want to follow any news story involving athletics, it's about players' unions and profit sharing and TV deals and never-ending negotiations. Will NBA players wear rings that alert officials if they're running a high temperature? Will baseball players start extra innings with a runner on second base? By the way, that's a real one. Will tennis players have to wear Birkenstocks while playing to lessen the chance of spreading the virus at tournaments? I made that one up. But it wouldn't be far off. Sure, we're weeks away from Major League starting back up, but are we? I guess only time will tell. And I'll keep asking these athletes and sports industry professionals what they're up to during this very weird time in American history. All on the No Sports Report with Some Sports Now. It would be difficult to find a global sporting event that has had as much of an impact on our country as the 1999 Women's World Cup. Maybe the Miracle on Ice, the Battle of the Sexes, that time Jose Canseco headbutted a ball over the fence. But there's something about that group of women that captured an entire nation's heart and changed soccer forever. And midfielder Julie Foudy was an integral part of that unforgettable team and an undeniable positive energy for the sport in general. She's a two-time World Cup champion. She was also part of the 91 inaugural U.S. team, a two-time Olympic gold medalist, the first American and woman to receive the FIFA Fair Play Award for promoting the spirit of fair play and compassion, and she's a National Soccer Hall of Famer in the first all-female inducting class. She's fought for human and civil rights her entire career. She's instrumental in the country's definition of Title IX. She hosts soccer clinics around the world and even visited Pakistan to ensure Reebok's labor conditions were humane. She's the former president of the Women's Sports Foundation. She co-founded the Julie Foudy Sports Leadership Academy, and she can now be seen on ESPN as a soccer analyst and heard on her own podcast, Laughter Permitted. She's a true legend in so many ways. And today we talk about making the personal decision to return to sports, who will play her in an upcoming Netflix movie, and we deep dive into donuts. We hit all the important stuff on this week's No Sports Report with Some Sports Now.
Call from
Julia Guglia.
To accept, press 1. Press.
Hello, Julie.
Hi, Jensen.
Hi. I know things have been relaxing lately around the world, so everyone is sort of moving out on their own pace, but I want to know where you've been quarantined and with who.
Oh, gosh. I have been quarantined in San Clemente, Southern California, my home, mm-hmm. which is a great place to be quarantined.
Yes.
A lot of trails and hiking and a beach that's right around the corner. And so we've been spending a lot of time outside, me and my family.
And you have two kids, correct?
I do, yeah. And I have a husband who cooks.
Oh.
Yeah. It's good living.
That is truly, that's like gold mining and finding a huge gold piece in quarantine.
I know. And he's always been a really good chef, but like you just, with the chaos of life, you never have time to hunger in and cook like he has. And he is, you know, checking out recipes, trying new things. I'm like, I love this man in quarantine. Let's go.
That is great. I was nervous because I do know you're from Mission Viejo. Mission Viejo is in Orange County. All I do all day is worry about Orange County now.
Do you?
they've decided to not make masks mandatory.
Oh, I know. It's so stupid, right?
It's terrifying.
Where are you from?
I'm from Woodland Hills. I'm from the Valley.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know. Well, another topic for another day, but
sure.
It's what happens when your leader doesn't promote it, right?
I agree. I mean, my wife and I went out to eat for the first time. We decided we would not sit inside of a restaurant. We have a one-year-old, so we wanted to get him out into the world, so he's a little less of a bubble boy. And we sat outside of a Baja Fresh. We ordered with our mask on, walked outside, waited till the food came to take our mask off. I'm telling you, it's not even enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's a weird feeling.
I know. We haven't actually been out to eat. And I don't know. I can't even imagine having a young kid right now. Our kids are 11 and 13. I say that all the time. I'm like, oh my God, with, you know, not having them in school or just being young enough, so young that, you know, you constantly have to be attentive. It's kind of nice to be able to say like, okay, you good on school? Yeah. Okay, good. I'm going to trust that right now.
I have talked about this numerous times on the podcast. I actually believe the exact opposite, which is that with my one-year-old, I could hand him wrapping paper and he's busy for 2 hours.
Oh, really?
You have kids who have full functioning brains. You have to do homeschooling. How have you been passing the time?
Actually, they're like the perfect age because they're very self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And the only thing they have yet to conquer is a 5-course meal that they should be cooking for us, which I would have then qualified this as a complete success. But yeah, they're actually, my 13-year-old girl is amazing with that. Like, she's always been a great self-starter, very on top of school and homework and all of that. So her making that transition was super easy. The 11-year-old boy, I said, look, I'm going to give you ownership, buddy. Mm-hmm. And the teacher is a friend. So I would occasionally check in with her, like, hey, is he turning stuff in? I'm like, can you let me know if he's not?
Right.
She's like, no, he's been great. You're all good. So yeah, they were really good. I mean, they're super eager to get back into school and see kids and friends and everything else. So I'm hoping that happens, but I know we're still ways away from that.
Is there anything that you picked up, new hobbies, stuff you've been binging? When you look back on quarantine, what sticks out the most as far as what you've been able to do?
The chaos of just what I realize, and I think everyone has, is just, it was, to find the silver lining, it was a moment to actually take a breath, right? And to just go, oh my gosh, we're running from thing to thing and sport to sport and activity to activity, and to even be able to sit around a dinner table and talk and eat and share and laugh and do all those things together as a family was something that was a rarity. So that has been a joy.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying, my husband has been cooking a ton and he's a great cook. And so to be able to spend time around a dinner table and we do something at the dinner table that we introduced on the podcast as well, on my podcast, mm-hmm. which is, you know, high, low cheer. So they're high of the day, they're low of the day, and someone they cheer for or something they cheer for. And so we've been doing that during quarantine a ton. And then just time to actually sit and watch things that you didn't get to watch. Like we do movie night practically every night, or game night, or we're very competitive. So we play a lot of ping pong and volleyball and soccer and everything. Pickleball is our new thing we've taken up. So I'm on the road all the time for work. So to have that continuity and routine and time was actually, I look back and I go, God, that was incredible. Like, really blessed in that sense.
Yeah, and you're actually not the first person to bring up pickleball. So that it seems like some people have been have gravitated towards it.
Oh, we don't mess around with our pickleball either, Jensen. I like taped out a cord on the front. We had a net. I marked it. I taped it. I got the really like industrial Gorilla tape, stucco tape, and we have a tournament. We don't mess around.
Oh, I would not think the Foudy household is anything else. But a lot of people have been binging television and movies and all sorts of things. And right before quarantine, speaking of binging, Netflix announced it's working on a movie about the historic 1999 World Cup team you were on. You were such an integral part of. As someone who has not yet had a movie made about my life, how do you hear about that? Like, do they call you? Like, how does that come together?
Wait, what? We have a movie? No, we were an integral part of the process with the eight. There's eight of us on the team of the 20 that they purchased the life rights to, although the film will be on, you know, the whole team, of course. So the eight of us had been very engaged for the last couple of years because this is something that's been in the works for a while. And Netflix, when they heard about it, which was really neat, they jumped right in and said, let's go. So then that happened really quickly, and the announcement of it and all of those things. But yeah, we knew this was coming, and it was, you know, how do you in the middle of a quarantine kind of get the word out? So they came up with the idea of that video where we're passing the ball to each other. But
yeah
it's going to be really neat because it's not a documentary. It's a feature film. It's a movie. And so they'll have to write it and cast it and all those things. It's a ways away, but it's still pretty cool.
Well, I did find a website that had some casting suggestions for you. Do you have someone in mind? Because here's what the website threw out. They threw out Anna Camp, who's an incredible actress.
Mm-hmm.
They threw out Claire Foy, who I love as well. And then this was a dark horse for you, but Cecily Strong from SNL, who I love very much, but I don't know if I see it. But is there someone that, you know, without spoiling anyone who's talking to anyone, was there someone when this idea first got thrown out there that you went, you know, who'd be a good me?
Dolly Parton.
Okay, well, that's different casting. I'll allow it. I mean, she's being brought up a lot as a new statue. Everyone wants her to take over the Confederate spaces.
Yeah, no, of course it's a fun game to play. And we all actually were like, hey, wait, do we get a say in this? And who would we want to be? And so we start playing that game. And so I've seen a lot of that on Twitter and social media, which is fun, but I don't have any preferences. I know they'll do a great job. I mean, it's nice to hear, too, that it's getting a ton of interest from really good writers and actors as well. So I do think it could be a really cool movie.
More with Julie after this. Now, let's get back to Julie. We talked a little about the fact that a lot of the country is reopening and there's been such a large magnifying glass on sports, which some people saw coming. I did not. Who will play? Who won't play? As we're doing this interview, I've heard Major League Baseball is inching closer, even after hearing they weren't going to. And we here on the show have reported on Major League Soccer's practices and what they're allowing. What have you heard about what's going on with men's soccer and women's soccer as far as getting back out there and creating something that doesn't sound like a sci-fi movie?
Well, the first to actually get out will be NWSL, which is the Women's Professional League. They're actually going to kick off on June 27th, and they're out of Utah, where they're going to have a 30-day, they're going to call it the Challenge Cup. It's a 30-day tournament, and they'll have group play and then eventually, you know, knockout stages and then a winner at the end of it. MLS, of course, is also getting back together, as they announced recently in Orlando. And I think the reason NWSL got out of the gate so fast is it's 9 teams, mm-hmm. right? It's a smaller league. It's easier to try and put all the protocols in place and the procedures in place and really keep a bubble around that group. Whereas when you're dealing with MLS and 26 teams and having all of them there and NBA's there as well, I mean, it's a much larger venture, I think, than what NWSL was doing. So, yeah, so NWSL is going to be the first out of the gates, which is great. Mm-hmm. Not all national team players, I think, are going to play. Like Megan Rapinoe recently.
Yeah, she said she's dropping out, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's not playing. And I think you'll find a couple more national teamers won't play. But it looks like, because there were quite a few on the fence earlier, and they still could a day before this even starts say, I'm not comfortable based on what they see in Utah. And there's, you know, of course, going to be no repercussions. They say U.S. soccer and the national team for if they want to drop out. But I think you will see most of the national team playing.
I mean, I've not hidden my feelings about this on the podcast. I am very concerned about the health of athletes. I know there's been some issues recently with the Dallas Cowboys. The WWE has been having outbreaks. Auburn, Mississippi State, mm-hmm. Alabama. I feel uncomfortable with players signing these waivers that we're hearing about in their contracts about mm-hmm. if they get sick. And I look to someone like you, someone who's done so much work for human rights and you know the correct thing to do. What is your feeling on getting back to sports?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one. I get we want to see people playing and we want them back out there and we have to return some sense of normalcy. But you also look at, you know, a month ago, we thought that you got to July and we would be seeing, obviously, the curve not just flatten, but go down. And what are we seeing in this country, right, is that you have a lot of states right now when we're starting to open things up, and especially with a variance of standards and regulations and rules and how people are dealing with it, that, you know, you're starting to see the numbers rising, which concerns me, honestly. And I think that's where, you know, you talk to NWSL, they say, look, we talked to 15 doctors. We've had all of these consultants. We have all of these procedures. We're doing all of these precautions to make sure that we're staying in one place. They're calling it their village. And there is really a bubble around them, and they have procedures when people test positive and all these things. But at the same time, everyone's different in how they approach that, right? Like my comfort level may be very different than another person. And so I think the most important thing that the players secured was the right to say at any time, I'm not comfortable. Right. And if I'm not comfortable, I'm not going to get my salary docked. I'm not going to get cut. I'm not going to have these repercussions. And I think that's an important piece of it, mm-hmm. obviously, because of the variance of comfort levels for that. So I think about if I was in that moment, and when people say, well, why isn't Megan Rapinoe playing? I say, why are we judging that? That's her decision to make, right?
Right.
And who knows what's happening outside of our lives with other people, right? So I'm never going to judge that at this time. I really think it's a personal thing. I don't know, honestly, what I would have done. I would have needed to see all the procedures and protocols and all of those things to have some level of comfort, I think.
And I guess my thing is, and I keep going back to it even in my own normal life, you know, trying to go, you hear movie theaters. I'm a big movie watcher. That's how I get away and kind of decompress sometimes. And I'm not willing to be on the guinea pig, you know, line. I will let others go first. And in sports, it feels like I genuinely feel since day one, since those NBA postponements, I feel like we've been looking to athletes to tell us what's right or wrong. And that feels real bad.
Yeah. I feel like we've been looking to the NBA, right?
Yeah.
I think you have a commissioner that, and Adam Silver, that people trust and like, and so as they go, you do feel other leagues and entities kind of going, oh, okay, they're comfortable with it. We're comfortable with it. Oh, okay, they're not comfortable with it. We're comfortable with it, which is real interesting in terms of just leadership, right? Which I think is missing right now in this. And that we're not even talking about it really as a country, which is crazy to me. I mean, I'm in Orange County, and so you got a lot of parents who are very eager to get back out and playing and going, and I get it. But it's also like, but wait, let's also take a moment and breathe for a second and say, what's going on here?
Yeah. I mean, we as a nation, I guess, our president, or listen, I'd rather call Adam Silver our president, but someone who hasn't talked to, you know, our COVID team in 2 weeks, you know, all these guys are racing to start a season that will always have an asterisk next to it. I mean, it's to me, and you've said, you feel like you go back and forth and it's individual, but it's like at the end of the day, when we look back on 2020, I highly doubt we're going to be talking about those 22 games of NBA we got to watch. It feels strange.
Yeah. And I think it also feels strange just with all that's happening with George Floyd.
Yeah.
I mean, sports feels weird to me.
Yeah.
Like even with, and I know Jensen, you guys are having these conversations on your podcast, but you know, we've had to totally look at, okay, what are our conversations we've had with Black athletes? And are we talking about this enough? And then we realized, like, you know, we were having these conversations about, and we interview all female athletes, mm-hmm. and not just the athletes. We've had Robin Roberts on. And, you know, I talked to Robin Roberts about the struggles of being a woman in our industry, but never a Black woman in our industry. So we're not telling her full story,
no.
Right? As unintentional as it is. So we've gone back and said, hey, can we get this right?
Yeah.
And so to me, even discussing sports sometimes right now with all that's going on and the craziness, it's like, I have a hard time turning my attention to it.
It's a weird up and down for me as well, because that's how I feel initially. And then sometimes you hear what LeBron is saying. You hear some of the players who I look up to mm-hmm. in that way. And you hear them say, this is an avenue where we could be able to show that kind of protest. And I know you've been dealing with these mm-hmm. barriers put up by men in power, like you said, kind of a different angle. But these last few weeks with a totally different minority group looking for what they deserve, I mean, it feels like mm-hmm. such a no-brainer to people like you and me. But do you think that the fan, the average sports fan, will be able to see those forms of protest the same way you and I would? Like, or is it just still just sports?
Give me more context. The protests at events, like athletes protesting, or are you talking like general protests?
I'm talking about athlete protests, because here's my thing, right? So LeBron James has been told to shut up and dribble too many times, in my opinion,
yep.
to think that the whole world is going to change and give him the correct kind of credit that he deserves when he gets back out there.
Yep.
And I understand that their ideas are going to be awesome. I'm going to be applauding them. You're going to be applauding them.
Yep.
But at the same time, the sports community, to me, And I guess I could be proven wrong, but you know, based on the NFL over the past, I don't know, 10 to 15 years, I don't trust those protests in the wrong hands. And I guess that concerns me.
Yeah. I do sense that we're chipping away at that feeling. Mm-hmm. And it may just be a loud minority, right? Of the shut up and dribbles, because you see it now in the Cleveland Brown quarterback Baker Mayfield, right?
Yep.
When he came out the other day saying, I don't care if I lose fans on this. I stand for this. I'm going to kneel for with my team. I'm going to stand by alongside my Black players. And the Drew Brees reversal, right?
Yeah.
In terms of him admitting, okay, I'm sorry, it wasn't about the flag and this is bad timing. So I do sense that even with the national team, the soccer team, when Megan Rapinoe, you may recall, Jensen, kneeled in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick back in 2017, she got a ton of criticism.
Oh, yeah, tons.
And even, you know, there's a photo that went around social media recently, you know, some of her black teammates weren't kneeling alongside her. She was the only one kneeling, right? Which at that time was like, whoa, what is she doing? And she was saying, it's not about the flag. It's about police brutality. It's about racial injustice. And now she's seen as, with other athletes, like, wow, she was way ahead of her time. Yeah. And so I sense that there are more and more who are saying, I'm not just going to shut up and dribble. I'm not going to stay in my lane. You're not staying in your lane. Why should I not have an opinion about what's happening in this country, especially as it's happening to teammates and black teammates next to me? Even as a white person, I'm going to stand up and say something. And I think that is such a healthy change. I've had more conversations about race with teammates, and I said, I'm so embarrassed that it's taken 20 years, right, to have these conversations.
Yeah.
Because that's, I think, the first step to breaking down a lot of those barriers, I hope.
Sure. Well, I'm hoping for more J.J. Watts and Megans and those kind of people than I am, you know, our president who's saying he won't support or watch, you know, soccer or football if they kneel. I mean, I think that opinion is going to lessen even in his brain, but I'm less optimistic than I want to be.
It's interesting, though. The polling is showing, you know, that the latest one, 75%. Agree with the protest
as a
country, right? Like they understand, you know, why there is this anger. So I think I try and keep that in mind that, you know, there is a large majority that understands this is a bigger issue.
More with U.S. Women's National Team legend Julie Foudy after this. Right now, Feeding America is working tirelessly to ensure our most vulnerable populations, like students who are out of school, the elderly, individuals whose jobs are impacted, and low-income families, continue to have access to food and other needed resources during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Feeding America Food Bank Network is committed to serving communities and people facing hunger in America, and their greatest need is donations and support of local food banks. This podcast is committed to donating a portion of the proceeds from the show to Feeding America, and we hope that you can join us in this effort too. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org/COVID-19. And now, the rest of my chat with Julie Foudy. As a mother and someone who co-founded the Julie Foudy Sports Leadership Academy that focuses on teaching leadership to teenage girls, what do you tell them about what they're seeing?
I tell them that we're living through history right now, right? And that this is a moment where we all have a part in how this progresses. And I think, you know, I was listening to NPR's Code Switch the other day, and Jamil Smith, who is a black reporter with Rolling Stone, said, you know, none of this changes until the people not affected by it actually do something about it, mm-hmm. right? And so I talk about that this is a community in terms of our leadership academy and as leaders where, and we've talked about this forever at our leadership academy, but now we'll have obviously even more of a focus, is just the importance of diversity around the table, the importance of different opinions and different people, and how, you know, study after study in businesses and leading businesses around the world, and not just gender diversity, of course, but actual race diversity around the table, and the importance of that, of just hearing different ideas and being a thought leader. And so we will continue to have, we're actually working on right now, building into all our curriculum, just relook, which I think is such an important thing to do in this time with everything in my life. We've gone to the podcast and said, how can we better? We've gone to our leadership academy. How can we be better here to talk about diversity and inclusion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to really discuss these things. Because, you know, even with my kids, you know, watching and reading, and it's something that I've said that we're going to spend the summer doing. We watched 13th, which is an amazing documentary other day. We watched Just Mercy, the movie. I'm reading Just Mercy. I love Bryan Stevenson. Mm-hmm. Talking to a lot of black colleagues at ESPN. So it's definitely been a learning process, and we'll continue to pass that on, I think, and I hope, with our leadership academies.
Listen, you're around teens a lot more than we are. My wife and I are around 40, and we have one friend who's like 20. I think she's 25 or 26, and we keep telling people, her name's Cassie. We say, everyone Cassie and down is going to be fine. I think and you can tell me better than we say it, but they already feel like diversity is ingrained in their brain. Like they I'm not nervous about them, I feel. I don't know. Do you feel similarly?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Every time I'm around youth, I'm like, okay, thank you. I needed that. I needed to be around more youth. I'm hopeful. When you hear them talk, when you see them, I mean, their activism, their advocacy. I'm like, okay, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
Cassie down.
Agreed.
You have an incredible podcast with ESPNW called Laughter Permitted with past guests, Mia Hamm, Katie Ledecky. You're in your third season now. What excites you about sitting down with these women, these powerful women, in such a personal setting?
Yeah. You know, I actually came to the podcast world with a little reluctance because there's just so many out there. I had a producer I did a lot of features with at ESPN who for years has said, and she's my co-host of the podcast now, Lynn Olzawi, you should do podcasts. We should do a podcast because when you stop the cameras down and we're actually talking to these athletes, that's when all the good stuff comes out, right? And you guys are laughing about old stories and, you know, and there's this, you know, common bond already being that you played and you're an athlete. So I was like, yeah, there's like a million out there. I don't want to do that. And then she's like, come on, just give it a test. So actually our first two tests were with Mia Hamm and Kerry Walsh Jennings, who are both friends, and Kerry Walsh Jennings, a volleyball player, stud beach volleyball player for many Olympics.
Sure.
And they both live like two blocks from each other in Manhattan Beach in LA. So I said, hey, you guys, can you just do these as a test pod and we'll run by ESPN and see if they like it? Because, you know, that's the thing with journalism. You just pitch stuff and throw stuff at the wall, and some of it sticks, as we know.
Sure.
And so we sent them those two test pods, and they were like, oh, we like this. Let's go. And Lynn was right. Like, it is a forum that actually allows you to talk and to share, and it's very different than lights and camera in a face, and you have to get a quick soundbite in, or you're doing a 3.5-minute piece. So I enjoyed it because you get, it's like you're having a cup. We always bring coffee and donuts, and we're sitting around before quarantine, we would sit around a kitchen table and we would just sit there and laugh and chat. And it was like, you know, we used to do with my teammates all the time. And you get all these amazing athletes from all these different fields and sports. And so it's been so fun, really fun. And we flipped, which is most encouraging to me, which is why we wanted to focus on women. 96% of our ESPN podcast listeners, as you can imagine, were men, right?
Yeah.
Our podcast is 92% women.
Amazing.
Which is really cool and getting great numbers. And so they're just, ESPN is, of course, thrilled because that's that market we're always trying to get to. And we're showing that there is a market there for women in sports.
Absolutely. So we like to end this with a little bit of positivity and then something dumb I want to do with you. But first, some very difficult times in American history right now. What do you hope we take from it when we're back out in the world, maybe with a vaccine, maybe with knowledge about people that don't look exactly like us? What do you want to keep from this time that probably will always be seen as crazy and mostly negative? But what can we keep?
Perspective, right? Like, that's the thing that I keep coming back to is the world lives differently than I live, and people are going through different things you can't see. And as much as you think things are getting better, like just because for me as a white person and my privileges, that's not the case in all different areas. And to not put my white lens on everything and to really, in everything I'm doing, say, how are we looking at this? And are we looking at this? And that's been this real awakening for me, and I hope a lot of other people in this country.
Yeah.
And I think that actually is such a positive in terms of, I think it's going to stir growth and hopefully change finally.
Yeah. My wife and I have had some very uncomfortable conversations with people in our family and things that we think we need to have. And I agree with you. It's a perspective thing more than anything. On to something stupider. I've heard, like me, you are a genuine donut head, a true expert. I am a longtime frequenter of Blinky's Donuts here in Woodland Hills, just a one location spot.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go over with you our top five donuts. I wrote mine out. I can start.
Nice.
I can start so you have some time to think about it.
I don't need time.
Okay. All right. Great. My number five, maple frosted. Great donut.
Maple frosted. Any maple frosted? Or are you saying like maple bar?
No, not maple bar.
You're going in reverse order.
Yep. Okay. Five. Four is cinnamon.
Okay.
Just cinnamon donut. Three is sprinkles, and I'll allow either chocolate icing or vanilla icing, just as long as there's sprinkles on top. All right. Two, and these are my truly basic answers. I know that these show me to be, you know, I'm the guy who walks into 31 flavors and says vanilla. Mm-hmm. I go 2 sugar donut, 1 the classic, you know, the glazed Krispy Kreme, anywhere really. Glazed is my 1. Let's hear where we are with Julie Foudy.
Just a regular glaze is your number one, Jensen?
100%. I have no shame in it. I wrote it down and thought to myself, I'm gonna regret it. I don't.
I can't even mask my disappointment.
Yeah.
That is Lynn, my co-host. She's like glazed all day. I'm like, oh my God, come on. Okay.
5. 5 is up.
All right. My number 5 would be,
Take your time.
5 would be just like a chocolate bar.
Great.
I'm all for like anything larger than my head. Right. I love.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
So give me bigger. Give me more.
Okay. So yeah, like twists and stuff falls into that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. 4, maple bar.
Great. Another good one.
Okay. 3, old fashioned.
All right. Okay. I've never been a big old fashioned guy, but I know that it fits. Go ahead.
2. Cinnamon maple twist.
Ooh, I didn't even think of it. That is a good donut.
1, without question, super gooey, super doughy, even better, a cinnamon roll.
Cinnamon.
We have an ongoing debate on our podcast whether cinnamon roll is a donut. And because it is fried, by definition, a donut is anything fried. So like a Cinnabon that's baked, not a donut.
Right.
Cinnamon rolls at a donut place, that is my go-to. And larger, like even 2 times the size of my head, even better.
Well, I'm happy to open the national debate of whether or not cinnamon rolls are a donut. I will allow it to happen. We need some levity here. Julie Foudy, you are a queen of interviewing. I appreciate you talking to me, and please be safe and healthy.
Of course. You too, Jensen. Thanks for the time.
The No Sports Report is produced and distributed by Treefort Media. The show is executive produced by Kelly Garner, Lisa Ammerman, Matthew Kugler, and me, Jensen Karp. Tom Monahan is our senior audio engineer and sound supervisor, with production and editing by Jasper Leek. Additional production help from Tim Schauer, June Rosen, and Haley Mandelberg. Our theme music is composed by Spilkus. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please subscribe, rate us, and review us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please visit feedingamerica.org. If you're able to make a donation, any amount makes a difference, and you can learn more about other ways you can help on their website. For more information on the No Sports Report, links to the socials, and for show transcripts for our hearing impaired listeners, go to treefort.fm. Be safe and be well. The No Sports Report is a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.